Hi, and welcome to the Psychology of Objections. Why do we do what we do? Why do we say what we say? Why are people lying to you? Is that possible? Are people really lying to you? When they say it's too expensive, I can't afford it, just looking, let me talk to my spouse, send me more information, I want to go to your website. Lie, 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 lie. Most of the time, almost 9 out of 10 times, it's a lie. They've been trained, they've been taught by previous persuaders that that's a good way to get rid of you, and most of the time it's working, or you're solving the wrong objection. You know, Dale Carnegie said it best when he said, when dealing with people, remember you're not dealing with creatures of logic, but with creatures of emotion, creatures bristling with prejudice and motivated by pride and vanity. I've got to get you past traditional sales and persuasion training. A lot of things you've learned here has been wrong. You've been taught objections are good. They indicate interest. Well, that's true in a lot of sense, but the reality is you want to solve the objection before it even happens, number one. And number two, they're probably lying to you, and solving the wrong objection doesn't help anybody out. We have learned more about the human brain in the last 10 years than the last 100 years combined. Why we do what we do. How do you get past those knee-jerk reactions? You do the same thing. These subconscious triggers. You go to a clothing store. You need help. You're looking for a shirt. Young lady comes up to you and says, can I help you? And you just say, just looking. You needed help. You wanted help. But that was a knee-jerk reaction. Sometimes that's what's happening with your prospects. Most of the time, these are not true. Isn't it interesting that 80% of all new products fail? These are billion-dollar companies. They do market research, and these products fail. Why? Well, we tend to focus a lot of times on the logical side of persuasion instead of the emotional, subconscious side of persuasion. They take a new product to a focus group, and what we find is one person can affect the opinion of the whole group. In fact, they had a focus group for a new kitchen appliance, and 60% of all the people said, yes, I'd buy it, we like it. But then the product failed, and they're wondering why, and they went back to the 60%, and only 12% of that 60% had actually bought it. And when you ask them why, they don't know, or they came up with reasons. Why we do things and why we really do things are two different reasons. Remember, up to 95% of persuasion involves a subconscious trigger. Restaurant studies, when people are evaluating the food, if they don't like the person across from them, if that person's annoying and condescending, it affects the food evaluations. We all know that $9.99 is the same as $10, but subconsciously, it does seem cheaper and it does sell more. You ask somebody why they bought the BMW. Well, good resale value, great car, and that could be true, but the reality was it's how it made them feel. The real reason versus the stated reason. That is a big challenge for a lot of people. When you look at the psychology of objections and why you get these knee-jerk reactions, a lot of the times it's that you tend to vomit. You've heard me say that before, vomit, vomit, vomit. You're listing the 112 reasons they should do it, you're over-persuading them, you're saying too much, and you're sucking the energy out of the presentation, and they're not going to buy. You're giving them reasons not to buy. Now, why would you do that? Imagine you have a son or daughter, a teenager, that says, I want to go to the cabin on the weekend for my friends because of this and this. You're like, okay. And this and this and this. You're like, ooh, I don't know. And this and this and this. And you say, no, you can't go. That's what you're doing in the persuasion process. You're saying too much. So first of all, you need to learn to ask the right questions. Top persuaders ask 3 times more questions than the average persuader. You need to become a great listener. We'll talk about that. That's important. How do you know if it's a true objection or a knee-jerk objection? That's going to be critical to you. And you have to understand the difference between emotion and logic. For example, Coca-Cola was losing market share to Pepsi. They didn't like it. They were spending 10 times more money. What's going on? So they did a little research. And they found out, of course, that the Pepsi Challenge, this was back in the 80s, losing market share. Pepsi was a little sweeter. And so they decided maybe Coke needs to change and be a little sweeter. So they made a different formula. And here's the interesting thing. And in blind taste tests, Coca-Cola drinkers prefer the taste of new Coke to old Coke almost 3-1. Now, if you're president of a company, if you're the CEO, that becomes a no-brainer because, hello, logically it makes sense. But here's the challenge. Emotionally, When they launched it, people were upset. They couldn't believe it because emotionally they were attached to the old product, even though they were the same people in the taste test that preferred the new flavor. Cadillac made a similar mistake. During focus groups, they'd ask people, you know, what if we made a more gas-efficient Cadillac, a little smaller? So, oh, that's a good idea. Gas is expensive. So they came out with a little stick-shift Cadillac. It failed miserably because people buy Cadillacs for emotion. Big cars. Not a little stick-shift car. A big car. We see this time and time again. So if you're the type of person that's getting a lot of objections, we really need to analyze a couple things here. Why are you getting them? Is it a true objection or is it a knee-jerk objection? Because there's a big difference between a general question of concern versus I'm done with you objection. A lot of the objections you're getting, they are lying to you because they're trying to get rid of you because they are done with you. You've blown your presentation somewhere. They're ready to run. They're just trying to be polite. And they're saying these knee-jerk objections. Too expensive. I can't afford it. I can't do it. That's what they're thinking. In their mind, they can't see themselves doing it. They're not going to tell you that, but they can't see themselves doing it. They're basically saying, go away. I've heard enough. They're trying to run away. They've heard enough from you. They're not interested, and they can't see how your product or service can help them. A lot of that comes back to listing all the features. You've been told your whole life, if you've been in persuasion, oh, sell the benefits, not the features. But nobody does that. You don't do that because every once in a while it works. You throw out a feature and it works. It's like throwing darts at a dartboard. You have a couple darts, feature darts, that you're throwing at this board and hopefully they'll stick. And every once in a while they do. Because every once in a while your prospect will assign a benefit to them. I remember doing some secret shopping at a Cadillac dealership, and I was to analyze their presentation or their persuasive pitch, and it wasn't very good. They were vomiting features, hoping they would stick. So we're walking towards this SUV, this large car, and the salesperson says, you can start this car from 200 feet away, and he starts the car up. That's a feature. It didn't stick because I'm thinking, I can turn the key. I've been doing that for years. Not that big of a deal. Not that hard. I couldn't assign a benefit to it. Now, obviously, the benefit is if it's hot outside or if it's snowing outside or cold outside, you can warm up your car. You can cool down your car. That could be a benefit. And then he takes the key fob again. He hits it, and the back lift gate goes up. He says, and this button does this. Feature, who cares? I'm thinking, not that hard to pull the latch and pull it up yourself. Not a big deal. That's a feature. What's the benefit? Well, if you're carrying groceries, you can hit the button. Well, now, if I didn't have that in my mind, if I could assign that benefit to it, it wouldn't matter. And then he gets in the car, starts up, says, look, there's a little camera that you can see behind you when you back up. Who cares? Feature. I couldn't assign a benefit to it. What's the benefit? Let's think it through. I'm thinking, well, I can turn my head over. Not that big of a deal. But if you think, well, sometimes with an SUV, you can't see children. You can back it up to a boat without having someone to help you out. Those are different benefits that he should have known if he would have asked me questions. All he had to do was say, what are you looking for in an SUV? What's the most important thing? But he didn't ask that. He just vomited all the features, hoping they would stick, hoping I would assign a benefit to it. Listing of features sucks the energy out of your presentation and will probably give them one or two reasons that will scare them away. Or one or two reasons that'll get them to think about it. Or one or two reasons to get them to wait. Now, during this series on the psychology of objections, one of the CDs is going to be on inoculation. Your goal as a persuader is to pre-solve objections before they happen. When someone has an objection, it's like hitting a brick wall. Once they have that objection, they have stopped mentally. They're focusing on that. You keep going with your presentation. You think they're following you. Their head still is nodding, but mentally, they're still stuck on this objection. Let me repeat that. Great persuaders are solving objections before they happen. You need to be professional enough to solve it in your presentation before it happens. It increases persuasion. It is a change in the world of persuasion. You need to learn how to inoculate. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this because we have a whole audio dedicated to inoculation. Pre-solve them before they happen. Now, every once in a while, you're going to get an objection, and I'm going to teach you to understand, is that a knee-jerk objection or a real objection? Is it a smokescreen or is it true? Are they lying to you? Are they being deceiving? This is what we need to talk about. Because let's face a little reality here. When people say, I need to think about it, you haven't given them a reason to do it that day. You haven't built in any scarcity, any urgency. And you probably figured this out by now, that if you give somebody 4.5 months to pay their taxes, that's how long they take. If you give someone 2 weeks to make a decision, that's how long they're going to take. You need to create some urgency. Or you might hear, well, it costs too much, or it's too expensive. Well, first of all, you probably blew your presentation. You have to really understand the law of contrast. They didn't see the value. You didn't build that perception of value. Even if they can't afford it, they should say, that's a great value, that's a great deal. That is critical. And that is a big knee-jerk reaction. If you look at all the knee-jerk reactions that people have learned from other persuaders, they know when they say it's too expensive, it gets rid of a lot of people. The challenge is old-school persuaders, they hear it's too expensive, and they go into their spiel, they're solving the objection, but they're solving the wrong objection, and that doesn't help out anybody in the persuasion process. Or you might hear, well, let me look around a little bit, I'm going to go with the competition. Basically, what does that say? They don't trust you or they don't like you. It's that old persuasion pitfall. You've pushed a little too hard, or they don't like you, or they don't trust you. And nobody ever tells you. You won't know unless they tell you, but they don't tell you. Think about it. If you go to a furniture store and somebody pushes a little too hard, you get that feeling inside, and you say, it's too expensive. I'm just looking. I'll come back later. You never do. Lie, 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 because you've been trained not to hurt that person's feelings, and that's what your prospect's doing to you. Oh, but then we always hear, well, I don't have the time. I'm just too busy. Well, the reality is they can't see themselves doing what you're asking them to do. If it was a great opportunity, if it was a great deal, if it was a great product, if it could really help them in their lives, they would make the time. They basically do not have a belief that they can do it. Sure, you can do it. Sure, it's great for you, but they can't see themselves doing it. Or, I'll call you in a few weeks, or I'll call you in a few months. Again, no urgency. The timing could have been off, or even worse, usually that's a big indicator of an information overload, a data dump, a vomit. Or even worse, send me more information. What they're doing is buying more time. Or they're just trying to get rid of you. The reality is most of the time objections are a delay to make a decision. Or basically an objection could be, in their mind, they're thinking, well, it sounds good. There might be a good fit. I might use it, but I'm not yet completely convinced. Don't fear objections. We see in a lot of persuaders, they're giving their presentation, they're giving their heart and soul. And when someone has an objection, it's like a blow to their ego or esteem, and you can see it in their faces and their demeanor, and they start coming across as condescending. Well, they would never say this, but it's almost like they're coming across as, well, that's a stupid question, or you moron, weren't you listening to what I was saying? How could you be that dumb to not understand? I think you see where I'm going with this. I know you would never say this. You might not even be thinking this, but this is how your demeanor's coming across. And this is a big complaint against persuaders. When they get to their close or their call to action or where the objections start coming, there's a change in demeanor and it's freaking out your prospects. You are persuading the whole time. You are closing the whole time. You're handling objections the whole time. You're pre-solving objections the whole time. You're pre-solving objections the whole time. Your demeanor should stay the same. I know when it gets to the point where you're going to ask for money or ask for their business, you get a little nervous inside, but you can't let that happen because they're sensing it. Your demeanor's changing and it's freaking them out. The reason I've recorded these 12 audios is to help you understand the psychology of objections, to give you the courage and confidence you need to welcome objections, to pre-solve objections, because this is a major weakness for you, whether you realize it or not. But if you can have that courage, that confidence, that passion to be able to handle these objections in the right way, you are going to see your income double and triple. And I know many things you've learned no longer work. People are more educated. They're more skeptical than ever before. And we see some major mistakes out there taught to persuaders, taught to salespeople that are really hurting them. Now, here's some big complaints. The prospect, the patient, the customer, the client feels insulted. They feel dumb. That's because the way you handled the objection, whether you meant to or not, was a little condescending, a little insulting. That is a huge complaint. I know you didn't mean to do that, but that's how they felt. Or avoiding the issue. Some old school training will teach you to not answer that question yet, especially when it comes to price. Now, there's a time and place to talk about price or the investment, but when you're obviously not answering the question, deferring the question, that's insulting to people, and they can tell you're avoiding the issue, which means you have something to hide, which decreases your trust levels. Another one is shifting responsibility. Somebody else's fault. Well, that's the company or the competition or the economy. Well, someone else should have sent that information to you. That's a big complaint. And topping the list, when you really start talking to prospects, is you didn't tell them what you were supposed to tell them. They had objections, but they didn't get the answers. And a lot of that comes back to solving the wrong objection. So let's talk about successful persuasion, successful objection psychology. Let's get you the skills that make the big difference. We know from different studies that it's the psychological qualities, that self-image of a persuader, that makes a huge difference in your success. That all comes back to self-persuasion or that millionaire psychology or that success psychology. If you have a challenge here, I encourage you to listen to Millionaire Psychology. That's all about success. Remember, success and wealth is an open book test. Going to give you the answers. The mindset's critical. Another part is understanding rejection is not personal. Some will, some won't. So what? Who's next? You have to get past that. I know it hurts a little bit. That's just reality. Even with all the persuasion tools in the world, you're not going to persuade 100% of the people. I could go to the streets of New York City and hand out $100 bills because I love humanity and I wanted to help out. Some people wouldn't take it. That is human nature. We have to get in the head of your prospect. Why do people buy? You have to understand people buy for their reasons. People love to buy, but they hate to be sold. Remember that. They'll buy all day long. That's a fun thing for them, but they don't want to be sold. So you have to ask yourself, what are the top three reasons people buy your product or service? Now, if you're in business, the big ones are always save money or make money. And they're always judging you. I know we've all been taught not to judge, but they're judging you. They're evaluating you. In fact, there's 7 things they're judging you, your product, your service on that you need to be aware of. The first one I mentioned is you. Your knowledge, your experience, your trust. They're looking at your price. Is the value there? What is the return on investment? If they're paying $200, are they getting $400 in value? Now, why would you spend $200 and only getting $200 in value? Or even worse, why are you spending $200 and only getting $100 of perceived value? Again, that's the law of contrast. You have to make sure that when you get to the investment, that it's a no-brainer. Third one is the company. What's your reputation, the history, the stability? Did you just start? Have you been around for 20, 30, 100 years? Fourth is the product or service. The quality, the features, the benefits. Is it really going to help them out? Many people are going to judge you on your guarantee. Basically, what's the risk of purchasing this product versus the reward? And then the subconscious part, the intuition, does it feel right? Remember, the subconscious triggers. It could be a color, a smell, a gesture, a word choice. Can they see themselves doing that? That intuition, again, that gut check is critical. And the 7th one, which is forecast. Meaning, after the gut check we talked about, can they see themselves doing it? Can they see themselves using your product or service? Can they see themselves doing what you're asking them to do? And I can't reiterate enough that you are persuading the whole time. Your call to action is your whole presentation. Your close is a whole presentation. In fact, that's the first thing you need to put together before any presentation is what do you want them to do? What is your call to action? And make it quick and easy. When you get to your call to action, when you get to the point where you're asking for money, it shouldn't surprise them. If it surprises them, you've blown your presentation. Now, I'm talking about these hard closes that work 2 to 3% of the time that have a 50% buyer's remorse rate. I'm talking to the point where you're going to help them persuade themselves. That's what great persuaders do. You're going to help them persuade themselves. This call to action, what you're asking them to do, first of all, shouldn't surprise them. Second of all, it should only be about 5% of your presentation. And it needs to be easy. I was walking through a gym, and they'd put in one of those juice bars, and they had all the powders and potions and the pills, all the fun stuff over there. And I talked to the person. I said, "How's business?" "It's not going very well." I said, "You got a captive audience here. You got all this stuff." He said, "Yeah, I wish it was better." And I said, "You know, if you make me a smoothie, I'll give you one thing that will double your sales." He says, "Deal." He made me a smoothie, and as I was drinking it, I just revealed to him something about human nature. Now, let's think through this. When you go to the gym and have a good workout, you're probably thirsty, you're probably hungry. A smoothie does sound good. But then as you walk by and you think about it, most people don't have their wallets. Hello? It sounds good, but then walking out the car and getting the wallet or not even having their wallet is too much effort. It's an extra step. So I said, put people on account, give them a couple smoothies, get a credit card bill once a month, and make it as easy as possible. I talked to him a couple months later. It more than doubled his sales. He made it easy. People could walk up and get anything anytime they wanted. He'd bill it to their account. Easy, easy, easy. Makes a big difference when you are closing or during a call to action, and makes it much easier to understand the psychology of objections. So let me give you some pointers here. The big thing and the big complaint we're getting is that you're talking way too much. You're saying too much. Again, back to the vomit. Saying too much. How do you know when it's time to shut up and ask for their business? You need to learn to read people. And it's pretty simple when you have the fundamentals. So what are you looking for? Well, let me give you a few. When their facial expressions relax, because before they're tense, they're not sure if they're going to do it, but once mentally they've made a decision to purchase or to do whatever you're asking them to do, they'll relax a little bit. You'll see it in their face. You'll see it in their body language. If they keep looking at the paperwork, if you have a husband and wife together, approving glances, you'll see a spark in their eyes. They'll start to lean closer to you. They'll start to mirror you. Their head will start nodding just slightly up and down. You might hear them say, "Well, that's a good deal. Well, that's not expensive. You know, I could see how I could use this. You know, I'd probably put the piano right over here. Well, that's a great idea. Hello? Time to shut up and ask for their business." Because when you meet them for the first time, they're looking for every reason why they shouldn't do business with you. Again, people are skeptical. But find one or two reasons why they should do business with you, seal the deal, and fill in the blanks later. They don't need to know everything. When you buy a car or a photocopier, you don't need to know everything that it does. There's the one or two things. Mentally, you start to purchase it. Everything else becomes a bonus. You'll also know that you're close when you hear somebody say, "Well, tell me about those terms again. Can you review that guarantee? What about your warranty? Can I have a demonstration? When can I take delivery?" You should seal the deal. Or they might even ask for references. Now, that means they're close, but that also means there is no trust. You have a very low trust level. So if that happens, it's a good sign that they're close, but we need to work on your trust. But that's a whole nother audio. Let's focus on objections. How do you know if they're lying to you or they're telling the truth? Is it a knee-jerk objection or is it a true objection? Now, when you get that knee-jerk objection, they're saying to you, "I can't see myself doing this." So you have a couple things you need to look for here. Now, first of all, you're always asking them to restate, because every time they restate their objection, it's going to be a little different. They're going to fine-tune it. And so this is what you're thinking. The first thing you want to think about is, does this objection make any sense? If you tell someone, "You know what, I made $50,000 on this real estate deal," and they say something like, "Well, yeah, but that took you 2 months of hard work." Well, that would be worth it. That makes no sense. Or you tell them of all the rental properties you have and how much money that it's making you, and they say, "Well, yeah, you have to deal with renters." Doesn't make sense. When people say they don't have the time, that is another big knee-jerk reaction. Or you say, "Well, I'm making an extra $10,000 a week in my network marketing company." And they say, "Well, yeah, but you have to talk to your family and friends." Hello, for most people, that's worth it. "Well, I make an extra $5,000 a week in the stock market." "Well, yeah, but you have to be in front of your computer." Okay, doesn't make any sense. These are "I can't do it" objections. So first question you ask yourself, does it make sense? Second of all, is it relevant? Did they just go off the deep end, make something up? is it relevant to what you've been talking about? Next thing is, did you lose eye contact? This is what I'm talking about. The moment they lied to you, and when we teach detecting deception, this is a whole nother module, but one thing you need to look for is that eye contact. So the minute they lie to you, they'll look away for a second and realize they're looking away and they'll come back. So you lost eye contact the moment they lied to you. Next one is they're not interested in the solution, how they can find the money or find the time or convince someone to do it. If they're not interested in it, they have lied to you. Or it's something you already explained in detail, or basically just surprises you. Where did that come from is a big red flag that it's a knee-jerk objection. Or they're just trying to escape. You can see in their body language that they're trying to get away from you, they are done with you, and they're moving on. So that's your first thing to understand. Is it a true objection or knee-jerk objection? Now, if it's a knee-jerk objection, you need to be able to ask the questions to clarify exactly what it is. A lot of times you'll get that knee-jerk objection. For example, well, I need to think about it. Okay, that's a knee-jerk objection many times. So what do? You say, okay, great, I can understand that. What exactly do you need to think about? And if they say, well, your terms here and here and here, I'm not sure about that. Then you know it's a true objection. But if they say, well, everything, I need to think about everything, knee-jerk, you need to ask some more questions. Now, here's something that can really help you out. When they have this knee-jerk objection, they're hiding another objection many times. So if they say, well, it's too expensive, great, we'll talk about that. What else is holding you back right now? And a lot of times you'll get that real objection to come out. Doesn't work 100% of the time, but if you've connected with them, if there's trust, a lot of times that it will. So write it down, tell me you're going to address that, say, what else is holding you back? A lot of times you'll get that real objection. So now let's talk about true objections. Let's say it's a true objection. Now again, you want to solve it before it happens. That's number one. Number two, not to sugarcoat it here, hopefully you're sitting down. What we're finding is, through research, is the objection you get the most is the objection you still have. Hold on, did I just say that? Yes, I did. What that means is, if you keep getting it's too expensive, what that usually means is you don't believe the product's worth it. I can take two equal persuaders of the same persuasion IQ, the same leads, the same script, and they keep getting different objections, the same ones over and over and over again, and this is what it comes down to. Let me repeat it. The objection you get the most is the objection you still have. So you need to go back to the drawing board, not only readjust your presentation to solve the objection before it happens, but you need to dig deep. Do you really believe in your product or service? Do you really believe it's worth that price? Do you really believe it's helping out, changing lives, and making the world a better place? You have to believe in your product or service. So let's get into true objections. Now, there's different types of objections. There's the unspoken ones that they're never going to tell you about. Remember those subconscious triggers? That would be something they don't want to tell you about. For example, if I was selling passes to a water park, but it was a no-brainer, really inexpensive, that everything was perfect, they might resist you. They'll probably say it's too expensive, let me think about it, I'll come back later. But the reality is, unspoken is, they don't want to be seen in a swimsuit, or they're afraid of the water. Those are the ones that you can find by learning how to listen and ask questions. Some of your objections will be true. Some of the objections will be venom. They're just cutting into you, they're taking it out on you. Now, this is where it gets interesting. Many times when they can't afford it and they really want it and they can see the value in it, they're going to attack you personally because it's your fault they can't afford it. I didn't say it was right, but that happens every once in a while. And then a lot of these objections are smoke screens. You have to dig deeper to get to the true objection. Now, when do you handle objections? Well, the best one we talked about is before they happen. Most people need to solve them right then and there. Some objections you're never going to solve. If it's one of those venom objections where they're making fun of you or your mom or other things, those are the ones you probably wouldn't address. Every once in a while, you'll solve it later, but you need to let them know that you've written it down, that you've taken a mental note, that you're going to solve it so they feel good about it. So here's the formula. When you get a true objection, you ask yourself, can I solve this? Very important. If you're talking to a company and they're interested in your product or service, but they're about to go bankrupt, you can't solve it. You might as well walk. When that objection comes up, very important that you understand that you need to let them finish. I know you've heard it 112,000 times. I know you've got a great response. Let them finish. Because when you cut them off, you come across as cocky, condescending, arrogant, you've backed them into a corner, you're not listening, you lose your ability to persuade. Then you restate it. So what you're saying is, you don't think you can find an extra 2 hours a week too. What you're saying is you don't have an extra $100 a month too. You restate it. Many times they're going to say, well, not quite. And then there's a knee jerk in there. But when they say exactly, you know you can continue with this process. And here's the big one. You always compliment them on their objections. Make them feel good about it. Keep the door open. Because if they feel stupid, like you're treating them that it was a dumb question, they're not going to ask anymore. They're not going to reveal any more objections because of the way you handled it. Always compliment them. Thank you. What a great question. And then, again, you're checking your ego in at the door. You say, you know, I should have explained that better. It's my fault, my fault, my fault. And explain it. Compliment them. Thank you for asking that. Keep the door open. And don't be condescending. I know you don't mean to. It's probably not even your world and you're even thinking about it, but that's how you're coming across. 9 times out of 10, the persuader says, no, I wasn't condescending. But when you talk to the prospect, the majority of the time, they're saying they were condescending. And always give them room to save face. Don't back them into a corner. Don't call them a liar. Give them room to save face. Because sometimes they're not sure why they're lying to you. They're not sure why they have that objection. Keep the door open. Always give them room to save face. This is what makes persuasion so much fun. You're solving a mystery. You're looking for clues. What do they really mean? Are they lying to you? Have fun with this. Build some confidence. And like I just mentioned, give them room to save face. Never argue with them. When you bruise their ego, when you bruise their esteem, remember the law of esteem from the 12 laws of persuasion? You have closed the door to persuasion. It's fun to win argument, but you can't persuade. What is it that Ben Franklin said? A man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. You might win the argument. Hey, good for you. You feel good, but you've lost the ability to persuade that person. So when you're handling objections, when you're fishing for information, you have to get them involved. Because if they're not listening to you, if you're not asking enough questions, remember, a bored mind says no. Or if you've glossed over the information, if they're afraid to ask questions, remember again, a confused mind says no. A confused mind says, I'm going to think about it. I'll come back later. Let me talk to a spouse and more information. They don't get it. They don't understand. They can't see how they're going to use your product or service. The worst thing you can have after your presentation is to have no objections. Now, sure, you want to solve as many as you can ahead of time, but if they have no questions, no objections, you've blown your presentation. They don't get it. They're bored. They're trying to run away. It's rare where there's not at least a couple questions at the very end. You need to keep them mentally involved through listening, through questions, through mental and physical involvement. That's why we ask a lot of questions. It's immediate involvement. Every time you ask a question, remember, great persuaders ask 3 times more than the average persuader, it gets answered. Let me repeat that. Every time you ask a question, it gets answered, either out loud or even mentally. I can't reiterate this enough. When you are trained to ask the right questions, that prospect, that patient, that customer, that client will tell you everything you need to know to persuade them. Remember, introverts out-persuade extroverts because they listen and ask questions. Ask the open-ended questions. Give as much information as possible. Take notes. Show them that you care. Show them that you're interested. And another important point here is ask the easiest questions first. Remember the school days? The teacher says, any questions? You're lost. You have no clue. No one wants to look stupid. But get the process started. Ask the easiest questions first. Thank them for the questions. And then how you respond to the questions is very important too. Now, if you're in a group situation, let's say there's 3 or 4 people or more. Let's say you're talking to a group of 20 people. You're talking about your product or service. And it could be a group or one-on-one, but let's take a group example. And somebody asks you a question that you do not know the answer to, what do you do? Now, a lot of people say, well, tell them you don't know. And there are certain situations where you can do that. But if they expect you to know the answer to the question, if you're the supposed expert in the field, you will lose a lot of credibility if you do not know the answer to this question. So what can you do? One thing is to throw it back in a group situation. That's a great question. Let me get the group's opinion first and throw it back. And you're going to get some great information. Maybe you want to have them repeat the question. What does that do? It buys you time to think of an answer. Maybe you want to say, you know, that's getting us off track a little bit. Let's get together at the break and we'll talk about it. And if it's a large group at the break, you could tell them, I don't know. So you're telling one person instead of the whole audience. Or you say, we don't have time to answer that right now, but that's a great question. Let me get your fax or email after the presentation and I'm going to send that to you. Or maybe you want to say, you know, there's a couple ways to answer that question, but before I do, let me get with my team of experts and I'm going to send that to you. I'll let everyone know, give them a way to understand. Again, questions and listening and taking notes are so important. And when I talk about listening, people roll their eyes back in their head. Oh, I know how to listen. I'm saying, no, you don't. You know how to hear. When I talk about listening, I'm talking about listening with your eyes, your ears, and your heart, truly reading people. You're so concerned about what to say next. You're so concerned about vomiting features and benefits that you aren't truly listening. In fact, one of the top trainings for Fortune 500 companies is listening training. So, I don't need that. But when you look at communication and marriages and the persuasion process, this is huge. Because as your prospects are interviewed after you persuade them, they've missed three or four features or benefits, and two of the ones they remembered, you never even talked about. Comes back to communication, to listening. You have to treat them like they're the most important person in the world. Learn to take notes. Don't look at your cell phone. Don't look at the people around you. Listening training is critical. Getting them to open up to you is critical. When people aren't going to tell you their objections, you haven't connected with them, they might not like you or trust you. I mean, what causes you to open up to a perfect stranger? Well, just give you a few. Showing sincere interest. Caring about them more than your commission. They can sense it when you don't. Having empathy. You haven't been trained how to do this, but empathy. Now, the interesting thing is empathy comes from Latin and Greek roots. To see through the eyes of the other. They need to sense that you feel the way they feel. That you accept them unconditionally. You accept their strengths or weaknesses. Do you really care? Have you boosted their self-esteem and ego? Or have you bruised it? Have you given any praise? We love praise, and most people don't praise because of their own low self-esteem. Learn to praise. How much does it cost? It's free. Learn how to praise. There's three steps. The first one, it needs to be something positive. You wouldn't say at a family reunion, oh, I thought for sure you'd be dead by a heart attack by now. Oh, I thought for sure you'd be 50 pounds overweight by now. Okay, not good. Be positive. Make sure it's specific. You don't say, great job today. You say the way you handled that specific thing, whatever it is, fill in the blank, was great. And make sure it's sincere, comes from the heart. What else caused you to open up to a perfect stranger? Optimism. That's a whole nother topic, but being optimistic attracts people to you, gets people to open up to you. Understanding connectivity. Are you good with your people skills? Have you found similarities? Do you know how to mirror and match? The law of connectivity is critical. Because when they're not opening up to you, they're based in fear. They're based in worry. You need to give them hope. You have to help them see you have a solution to their pain. You have a solution to what they need. They have to be able to see themselves doing it. You have to build a vision or hope around your product or service where they can see themselves tasting, touching, feeling, doing whatever you're asking them to do. Learn to love objections. It indicates interest. That's true. We're going to learn to pre-solve objections through this series. We're going to understand more about mood. Your prospect has to be in the right mood before you attempt to persuade them. We're going to talk about things you're doing during your presentation that's causing people to run to other people. A lot of times you get people interested in your product or service and they run to someone else and buy it. What's happening there? How to solve that? This is going to give you great confidence. This is a power skill of great persuaders. You're going to learn to get in their mind, to understand what they're thinking, what they're doing. Is it a knee-jerk objection or is it a genuine objection? Learn to listen. Learn to ask questions. Learn to understand exactly what you're doing. I want to think about it. I'm too busy. I'm not interested. I need to talk to you. It's too expensive. I can't afford it. Are usually knee-jerk objections. So, dig deeper. What do you say when you dig deeper? Well, I'm surprised to hear you say that. What do you mean by, and fill in the blank? Well, you've been very quiet. Would you mind telling me exactly what you're thinking about? Or is this the only concern that's holding you back from? Write the things down that are working for you, that you're struggling with, that aren't working for you. As a persuader, after every persuasion encounter, you should ask yourself, what worked well? What could I improve on? Now, if you're interested in the exact phrase to say to solve the objections, that's on the call to action audio. I wanted to talk more on this audio about the human nature, why we do what we do, and to help you realize that most of the objections you're getting are lies. I've given you the formula on the CD to understand, is it a true objection and how to solve that, and is it a knee-jerk objection? You'll get a lot of those. Again, what confidence it's going to give you to love objections, that it doesn't change your demeanor when you get it, that it indicates interest, that you have the right formula to do this. When you master the psychology of objections, that is a big piece of becoming an incredible persuader.